Honestly, the reason that I stopped fencing was because I didn't feel like there was a ton of opportunity for me to make a living and still train.
Hey everyone, I'm Katie Traxton and you are listening to Anatomy of an Agency, the podcast that tells you exactly how the talent industry really works. We have just been in the USA, so expect to hear some content from the other side of the Atlantic in the next few weeks. To start off with, we are joined by Quinn Crum. After winning gold at the 2013 Junior Olympics in fencing, Quinn has gone on to become a talent manager at Echo Lake Entertainment in Los Angeles, where she manages actors in Hollywood. I started by asking her what makes her decide to sign an up-and-coming actor.
I think when I'm looking for people to sign who are very green, I think the first thing, obviously, that has to check a box is just like, from what I can see, do they have something that's pulling me in? Because if I don't feel drawn in, I don't feel connected, I'm not gonna feel excited. My whole job is to convince everybody else that this is the best person for the job. And so if I don't believe it, the other person that I'm trying to sell them to is not gonna believe it either. So I think the number one thing is just like, do they have just that thing about them, which I know is such a non-answer. It's just like, you just have to have that thing, but you really do. And you can sense it right away. And the thing that I look for is different than the thing that somebody else may look for. But I think for me, it's also just, do I feel like I can talk to this person every day? Like, can I be friends with them? Because those are the type of people I want to work with. This relationship should be from the beginning of their career to the end of their career, if that's how they want it to be. And so if we don't enjoy talking to each other and we don't feel like we can truly be friends, there's no point in moving it any further. But I think at the end of the day, the main thing is just, do they have that spark? Are they willing to work hard? Are they willing to start from the bottom? And those are kind of the main things, especially when it's someone who's very, very green with like zero credits at all.
Where are you finding the materials that you're looking at in order to decide that? Is it official channels or are you going detective
work? No, so a lot of times it'll be previous auditions, or you know, we'll get references from casting who are like, hey, like, we didn't cast this person, they have absolutely no credits, but we really like their tape, they got called back, check out their work, check out what they've done. Or it may be an acting coach who's reached out to us. That happens a lot, and they flag people to us where there's not necessarily anything official to watch, but there's self-tape auditions, there's things of them in drama school if they went to drama school. So just anything where we can see them kind of absorbing material and seeing what they do with it.
And what about if they wanted to get in touch directly? Would you be like, oh, if you were any good, someone else would have flagged you to me? Or are you open to that tenacity?
So that's an interesting question. I'm glad that you asked that, because I think that's one of the huge misunderstandings in this industry, is that the cold email will get you somewhere, which, don't get me wrong, I read every cold email, but I delete 99% of them. And I think it does mean a lot more coming from somebody that I know personally, where I'm trusting their opinion that this is worth it to take time out of my day to check out this person that honestly can't back up their potential with anything other than, you know, me watching anything of them doing material and just seeing, do they have that thing about them? But the cold email, I'm not a huge fan of it. I don't think it's taken really seriously. It's definitely better to find literally anybody that can make a reference for you. Like, I've had people that I went to school with who are not even in this industry be like, hey, I have this person who's trying to act, can you check them out? And I will always say yes. So I think it's trying to find out, how can I get to that person directly without sending them 500 emails following up and just saying, here I am, here's my materials, because yeah, I'll read it, but nothing about it is going to make me respond to you.
I'll have to stop doing that. So you said that you're looking for a bit of X factor, but you also want the right attitude. You want them to work hard. You want to be in it with you, like be a partner, someone you can get along with. We don't want sassy and highly strung. But what can they expect from you once you say, let's go?
I think they can expect me to be working hard, and I think they have to put that faith in me that, you know, if you don't hear from me for 2 weeks, know that I'm out there, I'm pitching you. When things come, you will receive it. But I think it's just, we have to come up with a plan together to decide, okay, how do we break into this? And so if I feel like I'm working harder than them, especially when they're green and they don't have any credits, like if I send you a tape and, you know, 90% of the time you're sending it in late, or you're asking for extensions every time. An extension is absolutely fine, but every single time it's like, we need to, I want to feel like you're making this a priority, because I'm taking time out of my day on someone who is probably not, I'm not going to see a return in investment for a while, which I'm willing to do that work because I believe in someone that I've signed, full stop, but I also want to see that back from them. So I think it's just like a trust relationship between the both of us that we're both doing what we need to be doing without kind of mommying them.
And how do they know that you're legit? Like, obviously you're legit because you work at a legitimate agency. Yeah. I'm not saying you're just completely making up the fact that you're an agent.
Yeah.
But how do they know when you call and you go, I'm going to look after you and I'm going to get you the best deals? Mm-hmm. If they really are that green, surely anyone could say that to them and they're going to be grateful.
Yeah, they could. And I think the main thing that I hear from a lot of those people who are doing meetings with kind of just anybody and everybody is, if anyone is asking you to sign a contract up front or they're asking for money from you, run in the other direction. Like, this is a handshake business. If you feel I'm not doing the job that I should be doing, you are free to go your separate ways with no repercussions at all. And same for me. So if anyone's asking you to sign a contract where you're like stuck with that person and you have to pay them some sort of money, even if you don't have to pay the money, but signing a contract where you're locked with somebody, total red flag. And you know that person is not legit.
That's so funny. So first of all, that is not my experience of sport or entertainment in the UK. Not the casting, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about commercial relationships.
Yeah.
Because my advice would always be the opposite. If they're saying you don't have to sign a contract, they're probably going to be trying to do something dodgy. And the contract actually creates the kind of boundaries that protect you. Mm-hmm. So let's use this as an opportunity to talk about your sporting career, because you've been very successful. Did you ever have agents approach you?
No, I never did. I never actually fully went professional, because majority of my career, I was either, you know, in elementary school through high school, then into college. And this was before the time where NCAA, you were allowed to take any sort of sponsorship or any type of money. So I never had any of that, which this is a whole kind of new ball game, which I think is a great move, because a lot of these athletes can monetize on themselves. And so, yeah, I never dealt with any type of sports agent or anything like that, simply because I wasn't allowed to.
If you had, what would your reaction been if they asked you to sign a contract?
It's a good question. I mean, I probably would have done it, because I wouldn't have known any better. I guess I would have asked other athletes kind of what their situation was, but at the time it was just so, like, you couldn't even post a photo of you with like a branded thing on your social media without being tagged by the NCAA. So yeah, that's a good question. I probably would have signed it, to be honest, as long as I didn't have to pay some absurd amount of money up front. Like,
I guess I'm just interested if in the USA it is normal in the sporting world, but less normal in the kind of acting world.
That's a good question. I think with everything being so new, I'm not 100% sure, actually, but I think a contract is definitely more normal than on the acting side, for the sports side of things.
Is there anything that you learned from sport that you think young entertainers could espouse as character traits that you see a lot in young athletes?
Time management is one of the hugest things that I think I took out of being an athlete, is, you know, from the time that I started fencing when I was 6, and so I was traveling all over the country and all over the world, like, by the time I was like 12 or 13, and so I was out of school for a long amount of time, and I had to learn how to manage my schoolwork so that I could continue to do this while also training and making sure that I was representing my country in the right way. And so time management is something I think that's really important. I think just generally, even someone who's not an actor, that's, I think, one of the most valuable tools you can have, is how to manage your time. But I also think, you know, just that athlete mentality of, like, you know, I have to work hard for what I want to get. And I think something that my coach always told me and has still sticks with me to this day, is practice doesn't make perfect, it makes permanent. So whatever you're drilling in, that's going to become a habit. It's going to become muscle memory, whether that's acting, whether it's performing sport, whether it's doing whatever. Whatever you practice, you're going to be stuck with that, whether it's perfect or not. So I think that's something I always try to share with people, is that practice makes permanent. So make sure, you know, you're honing your craft in the right way.
Now that you're on the business side of sport and entertainment, Are there things that you wish you knew when you were an athlete that you would have done differently?
Honestly, no. I think it kind of works in the opposite way, where I think the things that I learned from being an athlete have helped me more on the professional side of things. Whereas kind of just to have that mentality of like, being told no doesn't stop me, it just makes me work harder, which I think a lot of people get discouraged hearing no over and over and over again. And I definitely know that a lot of my clients get discouraged hearing no over and over and over again. And it's the people that take that no and turn it into fuel for themselves that are the ones who make it. And so I think that's kind of flipping the question on its head. That's something I think that translates the opposite direction.
You were a very accomplished athlete. You didn't pull out of your sport because you weren't achieving. So what put you off?
Honestly, the reason that I stopped fencing was because I didn't feel like there was a ton of opportunity for me to make a living and still train. And I didn't want to be, you know, 8 years behind all of my peers by the time, whether I made the Olympics or I didn't, I would have had to spend at least that amount of time, if not more, to try to make the team. And, you know, if I had a result or not, who's to say? And so I needed to be able to make sure that, you know, if I was spending all my time training, I needed to have sponsors that could make it possible for me to train, to live in the city, and be able to afford all of that while either working part-time or not being able to work at all. And so coming from a niche sport, that's unheard of. Like, nobody has sponsorships in fencing that are making it possible to actually survive with no other work. And so that was the main reason that I stopped fencing, is I just felt like the risk wasn't worth it, and I would rather set myself up for a better professional career rather than being, you know, so many years behind.
If you had had an agent come to you and say, you know, with a bit of backup to the bold statement, okay, I think we can do this. It hasn't been done before, but that is a world of opportunity. Let's do it. Would that have been enticing enough that you would have taken the leap?
Absolutely. Yeah. As long as I felt like there was some kind of safety net to make the risk worth it, which I think I'm a very safe person, which there are some people who go out there and they do it and they make it work. And I'm just, my brain just doesn't work like that. It stresses me out to kind of not have any fallback. I think if someone had come to me and we came up with a game plan together where they can be like, this is how we work out, how you survive, how you train, how you can get all of these things to make your training possible, I totally would have considered it.
You haven't been out of the game in sport for very long, but things move quickly. Do you think that's changed?
Yeah, I do. I do think it's changed. I think, you know, fencing being what it is, it's never going to be like gymnastics or, you know, swimming or the big sports where you really can actually be comfortable. But I think it would be possible, absolutely, for somebody to take the time off and train. Like, I have friends who've done it, and it's not easy, but it's possible.
Would you give different advice to a young athlete than the advice you would give to a young entertainer?
No, I think it's the same. Like, for me, it's no matter what you decide to do, be the best at it. And so, point blank, that's it for me. Like, if you want to be the best at your sport, you have to work hard. If you want to make it in the entertainment business and you want to be an actor and you want to book something, you have to work. And you're going to hear no a lot. And so I think at the end of the day, it's the same advice for both things.
And now that, you know, social media is a big opportunity for athletes, particularly in minority sports, to earn money and to make a living outside of fees that they're paid, it's a new form of endorsement. Does that mean that the X factor, like off the field of play, is just as important for athletes as it is for those entertainers you were talking about?
Yes, because a lot of the times you'll see, you know, the athletes who are not the best at their craft, but they have a really good social presence and they know how to work Instagram, they know how to work Facebook, they know how to work YouTube. Those are the people that are making the most money, and they're half the time not even the best ones at the sport. So absolutely, I think, and it's been smart, the people who have worked that out, the way that they can, you know, capitalize off of social media and using their really good personalities in order to make more money, to make it possible for them to improve at the sport. And I do think at the end of the day, once those people do blow up, I think you do see an improvement in their performance on the field.
What about, this is gonna sound like a weird question, but I'll clarify. What about geography? You're only the second US athlete we've spoken to. And in the UK, you might end up a couple of hours from your family or your friends, but not so much really. In the US, can you make it as an athlete wherever you're based? Or do you need to head for hubs? Do you need to head to where there is opportunity?
I think that's gonna depend on the sport. I'll speak specifically to fencing, which I think don't get me wrong, there's people that have done it, kind of not in a main hub of fencing, which I would say, honestly, the only hub of fencing is New York. Like, everyone is training in New York, that's where everybody is. It's one of those sports, it's like tennis, where like, you need somebody else to kind of bounce off of and to make you better and to push you. And sure, you can have a coach, like you can have a hitting partner, but it's never gonna be the same as you going out and playing against someone who is better than you, or they're pushing you and it's not easy to beat them. That's, I think, the type of training that you need. And I don't think it has to be 20 people. So I don't think you have to necessarily be in a hub, but I think you do need at least one person there who's like close to your level or can push you in the way that a coach can't.
And does that translate across to the world of acting? Are you saying to people, you need to move to LA, you need to be near Broadway? Or are you saying, sit tight, earn some money, self-tapes are a thing, it's 2025.
Yeah, I think for acting, it's easier because everything can be done via Zoom. It's not something physical. Well, you know, acting actually is physical, but I think you can get that across through a video chat or through Zoom. It's not something where like, I physically need you to be there with me and like spar with me. So I think for acting, it's a little different where it's so expensive to live in the hubs of acting, where I think it's totally feasible to kind of just be where you are and just put in that work the best way that you can virtually. Like, but I do think it's still just as important to be bouncing off of other people and working with other people and doing those exercises together with other people.
You look after international actors here. You know, I just said when we're talking about an Olympic sport, most people train in their own country. They don't necessarily, but there are programs in most of the major countries. If you were looking after an actor who was British or Australian, are you saying to them, really, you know, you need to head to LA? Or is that an outdated construct?
I think really outdated, especially in the world right now, which is we're in a total self-taping world where you don't have to be in person, you don't have to do auditions, kind of, you don't have to be in the room anymore. And I think that's the main thing. But I'll say, like, for acting schools, I feel like the UK acting schools are just kind of like untouchable. Like, there's nothing better than someone who is classically trained from a British acting school. Those are the type of people where, again, if we're talking about bringing on someone who's green and has no credits, if I see training from somebody at like Guildhall or something like that, that's gonna take them really far.
Great. I'm very pleased on behalf of Britain. And then how does it work? So, okay, you represent somebody and they're waiting to hear from you. What happens next? Are you getting lists of casting opportunities, or are you getting entire scripts and you're looking for people for any part? Or like, what is the actual process?
Mm-hmm. I think for somebody, and this is for someone who's super green. Yep. Yeah, I think it's mostly just finding opportunities that they can fit into that are reachable and like therefore working our way up, because the more experience you get on a set, the better. That's what people really want to see. So it's just finding a way that we can get on set, whether that's, you know, your friend is making a short film and the script is really good, there's a chance that it could go to a festival for shorts. Perfect. Like, I'm never one to say that there's anything beneath someone. Obviously there's some exceptions, but you know, if it's a piece of art and you believe in the filmmaker, like, absolutely get out there and do it, because anything that we can watch on that actor is super, super helpful. So I think it's finding opportunities that make sense and that are feasible for that person, so they know I'm out there, you know, talking to casting directors. And while they may not be at the level where a general makes sense, but just making sure that that casting director is familiar with them, they're reading them, so that when they come across their desk, they're like, oh yeah, I've seen that person before, like, I liked their tape before, let's read them again. So just kind of making sure the relationships are there.
And when you get a script or an excerpt from a script, maybe people don't want to show you the whole thing, how much briefing are you giving your clients? Are you saying, this is the bigger context, this is what this director likes, you should try it two or three different ways that are quite contrasting? Or are you just going, new script, please send me the self-tape?
No, you absolutely want to arm your client with as much information, you know, as you can get. And so whether that's me going to casting, being like, hey, like, in this one scene, what's context with this? Because of course, yeah, they do sometimes only give us sides, which is like one scene, so we have no idea what's going on. Or sometimes they may be dummy sides, so it's like something fake. The project, it has nothing to do with the project, it's just something that they've sent for the actor to do. So just trying to find out as much information as we can, whether that be from casting or from, you know, other friends at other companies who might know something. So that's the thing I like about the entertainment industry, is we may be competitors, but at the end of the day, a lot of people will share information with each other, and we all just want the best for our client. So absolutely making sure that they have everything. And if I send the full script, please read it, because it's obvious when you can tell someone has not read it.
And how creative are you open to your clients being? If they came to you and they were like, look, I really want to do this kind of part. I know that might not be how you think I should look, or that might not be what someone's looking for. Is it the role of an agent to go to a director and say, in your head, it might be this gender, this race of person, but actually consider this person over here? Or are you like, oh, no, let's get you off the ground by sticking to the party lines?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of casting, I will always, unless it's like, you know, a historical figure or it's something like totally integral to the script, I kind of ignore. Age, sure, I try to keep to that more or less, but like race or gender, if I feel like, you know, there's nothing in the script that's saying this person absolutely has to be a woman, I'm totally pitching people who are the opposite gender or no gender at all. Like, that for me is, that's why we're here, to kind of change people's minds and to change their thoughts. And in terms of a performance from an actor, I love that. Like, I want them to do something outside of the box. And I think the thing that we hear from casting the most is that they're the most frustrated when they're getting auditions that are all like what they think the casting director wants to see. Like, they just want to see you make a decision, make a choice. It doesn't have to be the right choice, because they can always come back and give you notes and say, hey, we really liked what you did. It's not exactly what we're looking for. Can you do it with these notes? And that's always better, is to put your own spin on it and bring yourself into it, because that's, at the end of the day, what makes a good actor, is you can see themselves, that you can see that person coming through in the character.
It's what makes an actor good. It's what makes any of us good. Bring some of yourself through in whatever it is that you do. Thanks so much to Quinn for joining us, and we will be having a few more episodes from LA in the coming months. Until next week's episode, do get in touch. gvo@goodvibesonlytalent.com on email, or @goodvibesonlytalent on social media. I'll catch you next week.